Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody. It has been a couple of weeks, but we did not go away. We are still here. This is our Hoops HD report, recording live on tape delay the evening of Monday, January 3rd, a little after 9 p.m. Eastern. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, joined up top here by John Titel and David Griggs. Bottom row below me, we've got David Dorman, and from bracketeer.org, Rocco Miller back again as Woo-hoo. Well. We've got a lot to get to here. Uh-oh. Maybe, or maybe we just have a lot of cancellations to get to. I don't know. We could probably do a longer podcast if we just talked about the games that didn't get played than ones that did.
That's what it's coming to. I mean, good grief.
And, you know, I mean, anybody that's been following college basketball has seen what's been going on here the last two and a half weeks now, where we are getting, I don't know, maybe half the games that are scheduled for each day played, and then some bonus games added in here and there, and maybe a game added in and then canceled, and maybe a game canceled in the middle of warmups. Who knows what's going on? But Rocco, I know you've been following a lot of these cancellations. So before we even get into the standings and the results, so let me ask you a question here. Is this the right way to go here by just trying to get games in, or should we look into it? Maybe it's just time to shut the thing down for a couple of weeks and get past this surge of the Omicron variant here.
I saw our buddy Jeff Goodman talking about that earlier today. I think you know, it's really hard to do that because you have certain teams and even leagues where there's very little, if any, cancellations. You know, I think the SEC had one today. They might have had one other last week, for example, and Big 12 has been pretty good so far. And so why would they want to stop if they did a blanket shutdown? I just think it's so different when you look from East Coast to West Coast to the South to the Midwest. I mean, there's so many variables, so many different jurisdictions. There's different school rules, like Northeastern and UC San Diego have no fans right now, for example. So I think everybody's just trying to plow through it. I think the one thing that is most important here is the NCAA tournament dates are not going to move. So you might as well try to get as many games in my opinion, even if it means you got to shut down for 2 weeks, which a lot of teams we're seeing are right now. So again, I just don't think there's a fundamental way to pull that off. And so, you know, let's just pair as many teams as we can during these bumpy weeks. And let's hope by the end of January, the caseload comes down and boosters have kicked in. You know, a lot of teams got their booster shot last week. So I just think we got to weather a little bit of the storm, unfortunately.
Go ahead.
Okay. I was just going to say, like, Rocco brings up an interesting point because it really kind of varies from, if not school to school, at least from conference to conference. A lot of your power leagues play on multiple nights of the week, whereas a lot of your under the radar leagues have set schedules on the same days every week and traveling partners. So if you're going to see a shutdown, it probably isn't going to be nationwide. It might be conference wide, and they're able to rework the schedule to where it's like, well, Monday and Tuesday are open dates for everybody. So like for the week or two that we are shut down, we could just move those to either a Monday or Tuesday night later in the year. Whereas if you get this Big Ten or something, they can't really do that.
Right. I think we're already seeing that the West Coast Conference is talking about adding Monday, making three games a week to make up for a lot of their missed games. I think they're talking about adding Monday and Tuesday games in. So I think we're going to see that. And I would say quite personally, I do agree with Rocco here. Why not get a few games in, especially if there's no way to move the NCAA tournament? If you could move the NCAA tournament back, then I think it's worth discussing, a shutdown to get past this surge, because I'm hopeful that what we're reading is correct, that this is going to be a couple weeks, maybe 2-4 weeks, but by the end of January we get hopefully back to closer to where we'd been at the start of the season than where we are now.
And Chad, if I could just jump in there to Rocco's point on the tournament, unless you're going to go to a one area site again or one city area, there's too many moving parts to this tournament. There's too many cities. There's too many arenas involved. There's too many dates. There's NBA teams. There's NHL teams. There's concerts. So moving this back.
There's television.
There's television, CBS. Unless they're moving it to one site, I don't think you can move this tournament.
Exactly. Right. And if this is a short-term surge here where we've got to just get through the month of January, you don't want to move it to one site and lose out on all the fans getting into these events nationwide. If hopefully by the time we get into March and April, things are a lot better.
Just real quick on the television part. That's the key. That I mean, because Turner is a big part of that with CBS.
Oh yeah,
And this is more for the audience. I know you guys all know this, but Turner is also a huge part of the NBA playoffs, as we all know. So there's zero chance they're interested in moving the dates to any time into April due to their NBA commitments. So just with it being with Turner specifically, I think that just goes to show, out of all those other great reasons that Dorman provided, that's the nail in the coffin for even considering it.
Yeah, and CBS has – I know they've got the Masters. I don't know how big that is, but like it's on the dates that it is for a reason, and television is the biggest one.
All right. Well, I think that's something that could be worked through, but let's go ahead. It's not going to happen, so no point of really spending too much time. Let's go ahead and talk about games that did happen.
AC8 also going on his schedule.
When has the AC8 ever gone on? It's gotten canceled every year. We've tried to do it.
But not for COVID.
Let's go ahead and pull up the screen share here. We should be seeing the Big 12 coming up here. Titan, let me bring you in here and start as we go into the Big 12. We see the scores there of games that did happen. The ones that are in black are conference games. So there were three conference games that were played. Most notably, Baylor getting the win at Iowa State. I know you had, even coming off that loss, you have some thoughts on Iowa State.
I was hoping for the game of the year. It was close. You have to remember, though, this is a Iowa State team. They won two games last year. They're now 12-1 under Coach T.J. Otzelberger. No Hilton Magic, unfortunately, on New Year's Day. A 5-point loss to an undefeated Baylor team. Very respectable, obviously. They're hard to beat, though, Iowa State. You can't beat them from behind the arc. They only allow 25% from behind the arc, number 5 in the nation. A little worried about freshman Tyrese Hunter, their point guard. He might be hitting the proverbial wall. He scored in double figures in 4 of his first 5 games. He had a great start. Only he's done so twice in the past 8 games. He's turning it over 3 times a game. He's only made 2 free throws total in his past 3 games. All that being said, I have them as a 5 seed as of today.
Yeah, they are. The start they got off to, though, was amazing. But how about Rocco? How about the Bears, though? They did get that win. They're one of 3 remaining undefeated teams in the nation and, of course, number 1 in both the polls.
I mean, they haven't missed a beat since last year, and it's incredibly impressive. Just, we talked about it a couple times this year previously, the ability to insert a Kendall Brown, a phenomenal talent, freshman, but right into a system like this that takes years to grasp over Scott Drew's history. I think he's just done a phenomenal job of simplifying things for the young guys, because you're seeing Jeremy Sohan, the 6th man. I mean, the guy is unbelievably talented, does a little bit of everything, rebounds, passes, shoots, really good interior player, rebounder. And they already had weapons coming back with Matthew Meyer and Adam Flagler and, JTT. So, I mean, it's a loaded 8-man rotation that is very fluid. Kinjo's fit in very well. He ended up playing probably the best against Iowa State. So you have a team this talented, you get a different hero every night. Not everybody has to have their A game, and it really takes the pressure off each individual guy. So very, very difficult team to beat. I don't know when they're going to finally lose a game. I think, Griggs, you asked me that over the weekend. Maybe they'll slip up on the road somewhere in this league, but man, they are very, very tough.
Yeah, there's their upcoming schedule on the left there. Sorry, Griggs, go ahead.
Well, it is a really tough league. 7 net teams in the net in the top 40. So you're talking not just 7 inside the bubble, but 7 close to going in on the first ballot, really. Yeah. I mean, just remarkably strong. But when is Baylor going to lose? I mean, other than going to Kansas, they're going to be favored in every single game all the way to the national title game.
Remember, there's a road trip to Alabama also when they're in January. So don't forget that one.
Yeah. And that one's tough, but I don't think it's as tough as what they've already done. Alabama's good though. I mean, they are.
That one, the trips to West Virginia, Oklahoma, Texas, which doesn't come to the very end. Trips also. But Dorman, let me ask you about another team here. If you look over here in the these two columns, the AP and the CP, you could see we had 7 out of 10 teams in this league getting votes in both the polls this week. Of the three teams that did not get votes, one of them is Oklahoma State, who is ineligible for the NCAA tournament anyhow. Another one is Kansas State, who, despite being 8-4, is no one's really looking at them that much this year. The third one, though, is a 10-1 TCU team.
Wow. TCU is doing an incredible job this year. When I put my bracket together the other day, they're right on the cut line. This is a big stretch coming up right now for TCU. Their next three games, home to Baylor, at Kansas State, home to Oklahoma. They really could use a Baylor or Oklahoma win. I'm not predicting it, but if they could put this out of conference schedule with a Baylor or Oklahoma win at home, they're really doing good work. They have zero tier one opponents yet, which is huge because here comes the Big 12. Here comes all these tier one chances. They've got to win some. They got to get more than these tier three and four wins under their belt. And then this team will be right on the bubble, right in the conversation.
If they could get them, my issue with them is somebody's got to lose in this conference. And every single game, maybe other than Kansas State, is going to be a dogfight. And maybe Kansas State will be a dogfight too. So,
right. The reason I ask you to pull them up is, like, we have Rocco and Tytel here who study the selecting habits of the committee extensively. And typically, it is rare to see a team that does not win an out-of-conference game against someone in the field get selected if they're not at least four games over 500. TCU, it doesn't look like they did. I mean, the win over A&M might get in. Maybe one of those teams gets in. But while their record is incredible, was it too many pastry carts or too many cupcakes from the pastry cart?
I'll tell you
in what. A league like this?
Well, but if they can knock off some of these Big 12 teams, they're going to get a shot. Go ahead, Rocco. Sorry.
No, I agree with you, Dorman. I think that's the key. Like, there's so many opportunities in this league. Basically, every road game is probably either 1A or 1B, right? So with that being said, you win a couple on the road, you can build a really strong resume. You've got the Gotti record already set up. But in general, like, TCU's results in non-conference are an indicator of what we should see in conference, theoretically. They did get blasted by Santa Clara, by 20-plus. So, I mean, there's definitely a lot to be skeptical about. So they're going to have to prove themselves.
Right. And I got the upcoming schedule. I will be showing upcoming schedules through the course of the podcast tonight. Take them all with a grain of salt, because a lot of these games that we see on here have already been canceled throughout the night, or make
it. If any of this gets changed, I'm blaming you.
Well, we already know, for example, for West Virginia and TCU were supposed to be playing tonight. That was one of the games that we did lose.
Yeah.
But let's keep things rolling along here. Let's jump over to the Big Ten Conference. And Grace, let me start with you, because a few minutes before we started this podcast here, we just saw Wisconsin pick up what you called, and you may be right about this for out of rarity, one of the biggest true road wins by anybody all season so far.
Well, yeah, Purdue. Biggest wins of any kind. And when you look at the teams that are, if you look at Tytel's bracket, if you look at kind of the ones we've been doing, and if you look at who's in the hunt for a one seed, there aren't many losses. I think this is the only team that's lost on their home court that's in that one seed discussion so far. So I don't think it was necessarily a back-breaking loss for Purdue, maybe by one seed standards, as much as it was just an incredible win for Wisconsin. They probably now have claim to the most impressive singular win of the year out of anyone. Alabama, beating Gonzaga in Seattle is probably also in that discussion, but it was like when you look at all the resumes, and I know that all of us go through Chad's workbook and look at all 358 of them every day. You don't see a better win than that one on anyone's resume.
It was a very impressive win. A couple of teams I do want to hit on here, though. Rocco, let me ask you about the team at the top of the schedule here. KPI and Kevin, who runs the KPI, does the KPI metric, is a Michigan State guy, first of all.
Right.
Since his metrics started coming out about 3 weeks ago, Michigan State has been one or two on his metric every week. Now, I don't think he's actually gaming it. You do look, they have the number two strength of schedule there. They picked up an impressive road win at Northwestern. But Michigan State team, they just broke the top 10 here in the polls. How good is this team, though? Because I'm starting to think Kevin may be a little more right than everybody else is on this.
Yeah, I mean, they're really solid. And the resume is looking really great. They've got three true road wins already, which is rare for a power conference team because they usually play a boatload of home games. By beating Minnesota and Northwestern already on the road in the league, two very surprising teams. And then also the road win at Butler starting to get a little bit better with age. Although that Butler team they beat at the time was not very strong. Couple that with the three teams they played down in the Bahamas, which were Loyola Chicago, UConn, and Baylor. You mix in a splash of Louisville, and it's and the losses to Baylor and Kansas. So, yeah, I mean, like 9 of their 14 games have been all really, really tough, difficult games, and they won 7 of those 9. So, yeah, they're getting the respect they deserve. Max Christie's NBA lottery pick, I'm sure. So, they've got the talent there, good experience. I do think they're more of like a second tier team. I wouldn't put them in that elite group yet with the Kansas and the Gonzagas and Arizona and those types of teams. So they'll get their chance to prove themselves. I just think they've gotten really good at closing out wins late and making clutch plays, and that's a sign of a really good team.
I got to tip my hat. Their non-conference strength of schedule is 4th, and they're not even a SWAC or MEAC team.
Well, when you play what they've played, look at that again.
God. They went out, and so did Nova, so did Baylor. I mean, Michigan State went out and played. Holy crap.
Let's Tytel. How about the team that Michigan State beat, though? Northwestern. Should we pay a little more attention to them this season? Yeah,
good question.
As long as they're listed as a tier one win for Michigan State, you better believe it. You're talking about a team that's coming off of a horrible season. They won 9 games last year. They already have 8 so far this year with a 4-point loss, a 5-point loss, and a 6-point loss. They're in every game because of Coach Chris Collins. Great interior defense as well. Number 4 in the nation, under 40% allowed from 2-point range. And they're also shooting about 77% from the line, which means they should actually start winning some of those close games. They got Penn State on Wednesday, and then they have 7 straight games against top 60 teams. So good luck. Junior Chase Adige has been a key. He missed the first 7 games with a hip injury. Now that he's healthy, 11 points and 2 steals a game. He's only missed 1 free throw all season. They're outside the bubble at the moment, and as long as they keep being competitive, they could make their way up there.
Yeah, had they won just one of those games, it would have changed the entire complexion of this resume. Now, they still have many, many, many chances to change the complexion of the resume, but
About non-conference strength of schedule, the 299 there, bit of a contrast with Michigan and the Michigan State on the left.
Yes, it is.
But Dorman, how about the other team from what Ohio State fans call the state up north? How about the Wolverines lost to Central Florida to add to their woes at a team that people were talking Final Four heading into the season?
The Central Florida game wasn't even that close. They weren't even in the game down the stretch. As we sit here in the first few days of January, Michigan in the tier one games, as we see right there, 0-4 for a team that everyone thought coming into the season was easily top 10, if not top 5. This team had big time aspirations, and every big game has been a loss.
By a lot.
They haven't even been in most of these games.
Except the Seahawks.
After Rutgers, they go to Rutgers. After Rutgers, home Michigan State, home Purdue in Illinois. Those three games are as big as it gets for Michigan. Will they be able to turn their team, their season around? Those three games are as big as it gets because this team is heading in the wrong direction. As I put my bracket together the other day, they were one of the last 4 in.
Yeah, and by the way, as we record this right now, as of right now, the game at Rutgers tomorrow night is a go. So it's rare that we could be saying that today. Dorman, real quick, I pulled up Minnesota to compare them to on the right, a team that everyone thought was going to be at the bottom of the Big Ten. Here they are with those multiple Big Ten, multiple tier one wins, including the win at Michigan, and 10-1 overall.
I have them ahead of Michigan as we sit today. I think Minnesota is actually safely in. And if you're going to compare these two, it's easy because they won in Michigan. They also won in Mississippi State. They have a loss, I believe, to Michigan State. That everyone's going to have that. There's no harm in that. Illinois at Indiana, at Michigan State, home to Iowa. I know I keep saying these next big games for these power conference teams that absolutely annihilated the out of conference with a lot of easy wins are about to get tested. That's why I keep mentioning who they're playing the next three or four games. Minnesota is in a big part of their schedule coming up right now, the next 2 weeks.
Absolutely. And let's take a quick look here. This is that upcoming schedule in the Big Ten, for what it's worth. Who knows what games will actually be played here or not. As we record this, I believe we have Maryland, Iowa going on this evening right now. That's a big one, but let's jump over.
Another game coming up this week. Okay. Yeah. We've got, who is it? Ohio State at Indiana. I just want to mention that we didn't mention that in case Galen is watching.
Indiana, who lost at home to Penn State, yes. And it's just, you know, it's not looking good for Indiana right now, yeah. I don't think at all. But let's
we wouldn't be doing our job if we didn't point that out.
Let's go over to the Big East. Tytel, let me start with you here in the Big East and start kind of down towards the bottom there, with the Seton Hall team that had a rough couple of close games, but 0-2 this past week.
Yeah, they were looking much better when I was ready to talk about them before we canceled the last show. But still, when you're missing 2 weeks to COVID, then you're playing at Providence and hosting Villanova and losing by 6 points or less, I can at least excuse it. Another team, great perimeter defense. Actually, number two in the whole country, 26% allowed from behind the arc. The bad news, they're allowing almost 80% from the free throw line, which is the worst of any power conference team in the country. You figure it has to come back to earth at some point. And I want to focus on their senior point guard, Bryce Aiken. He turned 25 last month, which is insane to begin with. When you're an old guy, you need a little rest to do better. When he starts, he only scored 6 points in his two starts per game. In his nine games off the bench, he's scoring 14 points a game. Coach Willard realized, give the old guys some rest. I have them as a five seed right now.
Yes. But very, it's tough when you see OT that's 0-2 in conference as a five seed, but I do think that they bounce back from this. One of those losses, of course, the Providence loss, Rocco. How about the Friars here? I was not a believer heading into the season. And we know with every team I mentioned, Briggs wants to pull them up, but go ahead, Rocco.
Yeah, I was going to bat for them in the preseason. I didn't expect a 13-1 start. They've caught, you know, some good fortune, but at a certain point, you got to say, okay, you know, cut the excuses. This is a darn good team. Obviously, you know, they beat UConn without Sonogo. They beat a shorthanded Seton Hall team. They beat Wisconsin without Johnny Davis. They got Texas Tech. So, yeah, I mean, they've been able to skate by, but now they're just – That's yielded more and more confidence. They go to DePaul over the weekend, and that was not a game. I mean, they were up by like 30 in the first half. And so, you know, the Friars have got some magic going on. Obviously, we knew Nate Watson would be a major All Big East type of player. But with the addition of Durham and the evolvement of Horchler, you add A.J. Reeves and some other experience in there. This is a really, really good team. And credit to Ed Cooley, you know, one of the underappreciated coaches. He always gets the most out of his guys, and this is this might be his best year yet so far.
Yeah, when you look at where this resume tops out now, Rocco brought up some crucial points that I that needed to be pointed out before I gush all over them. I'm glad he went first, but. To win at Wisconsin and at Connecticut, those two teams have one home loss each, and it's both the Providence. That's remarkable, especially when we saw what Wisconsin just did. But as he said, neither team was exactly at full strength. But why isn't this team getting a little more love? I mean, they're still ranked in the teens, but with that kind of resume, with those kind of wins, shouldn't they be in the top 10?
Well, look at these resume based metrics here. Two of them, the KPI has them number three overall.
Yeah.
The ESPN strength, the resume has them number two overall. Joby's not with us tonight. His JNG has them a little bit lower down at 11. But I think if we want to talk about top of the Big East, Dorman, I brought up on the right side there, Creighton, another team off to a 2-0 start in conference, and really surprising me.
This is a great comparison right here, because like the guys just said, Providence is off to an incredible start. And Creighton isn't far behind. As I said in my bracket the other day, they were one of my first two out. So they're right on the cut line. But their foundation is set, because you got two big wins versus Villanova and BYU. Again, I sound like a broken record, but here, they're going at Villanova, home to Providence, at Xavier. Three enormous games when you're sitting on the bubble, right on the cut line at the beginning of the year. So if Creighton can pull off two of these three, they're on their way.
I mean, this is their biggest stretch of the season right here, too, with these three games, assuming they go and they don't end up getting played in, you know, end of February, beginning of March or something like that. Yeah. But let's just take a quick look at the upcoming schedule in the Big East for what's at least allegedly going to be happening there. Who knows? Rocco, you've probably canceled half these games on us already. I know you like to announce those cancellations. But
I mean, I definitely don't like to. I just
I know.
get the word out quick. But the Georgetown situation is in flux. I was curious. I know they're off tomorrow against Xavier. And then I don't know about Friday. I actually reached out to Marquette today. They didn't respond. So I don't know if that's been decided yet. But hopeful to get Marquette a non-conference game if Georgetown can't go.
Okay. Let's jump over to the SEC, which should be coming up on the screen here in a second. There it is. Sure. And, Alabama. Well, you know what? Let's start, Rock. Let me start with you on this Auburn team. Very impressive last week by 15 points over Auburn. Over LSU, an LSU team that we were all pretty high on going into that game.
And you know, Auburn did the same exact thing to Murray State the game before. I think they're going to be really, really difficult if anybody can beat them at Auburn. I mean, they have a different gear when they're playing at home. And they've shown it, I mean, in the limited examples against some tough teams. And then I think the one time they sweat in the last month was St. Louis. They were actually losing with about 5 minutes left and were able to get some key plays down the stretch to pull it out. But the thing about this team under Bruce Pearl, it's like a 9-10 deep team. And Flanagan just came back. Alan Flanagan just came back. So, you know, you've got an all-world talent in Jabari Smith. I agree with Tytel's comment a week or two ago about him maybe being freshman of the year in the country with Paolo Banchero also in the mix. But it's not just him. It's Walker Kessler. It's Wendell Green came over from Eastern Kentucky. They are just overwhelming teams. They did it all non-conference. I think they're going to overwhelm at least half the SEC when they play them. And then it's going to be some real battles when they get in there with Alabama and Kentucky and those types. I'm not really surprised. Honestly, they were showing those signs early in their early blowouts, and they've just continued to get better and better.
Yeah, they are looking so good. Tytel, on the right side there, I brought up this Tennessee team. Although it has three losses, they've been all to very good teams, including that loss at Alabama this past week.
Yeah, brutal schedule to finish 2021. They had one of the best wins of any team this season before Wisconsin beat Purdue tonight, where they had the 4-point win over my previously undefeated Wildcats. They did almost blow a 15-point first half lead, though. Then they go to Alabama last Wednesday, lose by 5, despite playing without Kennedy Chandler and John Fulkerson. So I don't even know how they were able to keep that one close. One of my favorite stats this season, the long-range shooting of their 6'8 big man from Finland, Olivier Kamwa. Freshman year, he's 1 of 5 from behind the arc. As a result, sophomore year, Coach Rick Barnes says, hey, you're not allowed to take a single shot because you suck. This year, 10 of 19 from three-point range, or as they call it in Finland, Kolme Pistein Alue. I have another 4 seed right now.
Wow.
Very nice.
Yes,
I'm impressed. I don't know. Let me just go to you on that. I don't know where else to go. LSU, the team that did lose to Auburn. I'll put them up here on the left side. I know you have a few thoughts on them.
I'm going to stick to English here. LSU LSU is, to me, still a question mark. Right now, most brackets are showing right on the protected seed, 4, 5, 6 area. My questions are, because there's one tier one game so far, and it's a loss. Nothing wrong with it at Auburn. But here comes a loaded SEC schedule. So did they get real fat and happy on a bunch of cupcakes, or are they going to show something against Kentucky and Tennessee at home? They go on the road to Florida, home to Arkansas. Again, another power five, another power team, power conference team, with a huge 2 to 3 week run coming. I think we'll learn a lot more about LSU in the next 2 weeks.
Arkansas has proved that they were a fraud when they got off for that great start. Yeah. They are falling apart fast, got blown out by Mississippi State. And Griggs, despite losing a home game to Gardner Webb, Georgia actually got a vote in the top 25 AP.
Yeah, Georgia
by all being a mistake by a guy out from Honolulu.
So Georgia checking in 30th in the AP poll this week. 245th in the net, 30th in the AP.
5-8 overall.
That is the biggest discrepancy between the two ever.
That was a mistaken vote by an AP voter out from Hawaii. But Georgia technically did get votes.
Yeah, and don't be too rough on this guy. No. He's not an idiot. He does not think Georgia is the fourth best team in the country, and it's confusing. It's a pull down menu. You get going pretty quick. He just made a mistake.
No fault at all there. But let's. Let's take a quick look at the upcoming games, alleged games here in the conference. Yeah. I don't even know what's on or off here. So these are, if you're looking for what may or may not be on here, here's a list of games.
All of them are good, Chad, except for Mississippi State, Missouri. Missouri just went on pause.
They don't ever even need to be scheduled that one, Rocco. Right. That's meaningless.
Missouri has been on pause for 2 years now.
The good news there is that frees up Alabama next Saturday, and there is a chance Alabama could play a marquee non-conference game, which is discussions going on behind the scenes. Hopeful something happens.
That'd be awesome if it does. Griggs, let me go back to you though and jump over to a second of our three undefeated teams left in the nation here. USC 12-0 off of a powerful week of doing absolutely nothing.
And what's really unfortunate is the games would have been against top 10 opponents. They would have been showcases. It would have been amazing, and it made me sad that they didn't get played. I think they're really good. Are they one seed good? Well, I don't know. We'll find out after they actually get to play UCLA and Arizona. I know this isn't the question you asked, but this is kind of remarkable. I think we have three protected seeds here and no one else.
I don't even necessarily know that we have an NIT team in this conference, right, after those three. Tytel, how about, I won't even go with your Arizona team. How about UCLA though? Also a team that didn't play.
Yeah, but when you're 8-1 with your only loss to Gonzaga at a neutral site, I think you're worth talking about for a minute. So they haven't played since beating Marquette on the road on December 11th because of COVID. Hopefully getting back onto the court at Cal on Saturday. They're doing it from long distance when they do play. 39% behind the arc is top 15 in the nation. A little concerned about their leading scorer, Johnny Juzang. First three games, 23 points a game, looked like an All-American. Past six games, only 13 points a game. Decent, but not that great. Rumor I saw is that their big man, Cody Riley, might make his season debut this weekend. He's been out all season due to a left knee injury. And even though they haven't played in a month, I still have him as a 2 seed because they're 8-1 and their only loss is to Gonzaga.
Rocco, the only other team worth mentioning here, Arizona, as we record this, is putting the finishing touches on your Washington team. In one of three games that as of this morning even was going to be played, but we lost Colorado, Oregon, and we lost Sacramento State, Oregon State moments before tip-off today.
Yeah, it was a rough day. Like the Oregon announcement came out and right around the same time that Oregon State came out for warm-ups, and they only had 7 players dressed, and then found out a few minutes later that with the contact tracing, 2 of the other guys couldn't play. So they were down to 5 and that was it. Everybody left. Third time they tried to play Sacramento State. First time, last minute cancellation. Beavers had COVID protocols. Second time, inclement weather didn't allow Sacramento State to travel. Today is round 3. They're there. and had to leave. It's just story of the last few weeks. But yeah, overall, you know, Oregon did get a win over Utah Saturday night. So with their situation now going on pause, it had to have happened within the last 24 hours. That obviously raises some concerns about the Utes' health going forward. But yeah, it's good overall to have UCLA close to returning. That should happen Wednesday against ASU. I think Riley was actually already practicing before the pause. So he should actually be pretty good unless he was sick. So yeah, I think in general, we just want to see these teams playing again, especially that USC team as well.
Yeah. It's just been rough not getting these games in. There's some alleged games. I think some of these are already off. Probably most of them are. Let's jump over to the ACC. We have not, that's the one remaining quote unquote power conference. Although as we look at the ACC here, we are seeing only one team that got a single vote, that even got any votes in the AP poll at Duke. First time in over 40 years that has happened. The ACC, at least Florida State got a vote in the coaches poll. But beyond this Duke team, I don't know what else we're looking at here. And that's been our problem all season. Dorman, let me start with you. Wake Forest is a team that we're kind of keeping an eye on earlier, but they go and they lose, go 0-2 this week.
Yeah, they went down to Miami and couldn't get it done. They had chances. They didn't hit the big shots, and Miami did, and Miami got the big stops down the stretch. Maybe we should start talking about Miami, but overall, I'm with you, Chad. This ACC is not good. There is very, very few wins to be had that are going to look good to the committee. But Miami, who I had right on the outside looking in, but I had Wake Forest barely in. They win, like we said, at home to Wake the other day. Again, here we go. Miami's got some big games coming up because they have this Duke game. Duke is going to be the one game in the ACC you can really lean on and show the committee you got something. It's in Duke. I don't think they're going to beat them. But if they want to claim they're a tournament team, they better at least show very well in that game or pull off the upset.
Well, actually, our friend Joby Fortune is not with us tonight. He does his J&G ratings. And his news rate that came out today, Tytel had Miami, I believe, as the last team in, according to the J&G, actually making the field off of that Wake Forest win. Is Miami getting there?
They're trending upward, obviously, and much like the Dolphins, their NFL team in the same city who started horribly and then won 7 in a row, all Coach Jim Larrañaga has done is start 4-3 and then won 7 in a row. The schedule obviously gets much harder. Syracuse at home Wednesday, trip to Duke on Saturday. They really need to work on the perimeter defense. They're allowing over 36% behind the arc, which is terrible. So you can beat them if you can make threes. Senior Cameron McGusty, in the loss to Dayton on Thanksgiving, only had 8 points. Since then, 9 games, 19 points a game. He's been unstoppable. They're outside the bubble at the moment, but to be fair, so is everybody else besides Duke in this conference.
When you look at Duke, are they going to have enough juice to get a one seed?
That's it. Rocco, why don't you answer that question here? Duke, you know, basically playing the type of schedule.
A lot of juice. Those two.
Okay. Yeah, they got those two big wins, but where's another tier one win the rest of the season? Where is it?
Well, tier one, I mean, you're talking 1A, maybe not, but I think they'll get a handful of 1Bs. You got a lot of teams in this league that are in that 35 to what is it? The 38 to 75 range for 1B
on the road. Yeah.
On the road. So yeah, I mean, if they keep playing the way they're playing, I don't see how you keep them off the one line, but I guess they can slip down to a two if, you know, a couple of these teams knock them off, especially if they lose one at home. But yeah, I mean, Duke's elite and they've already shown that. I have a lot less doubts than I used to about this team.
Okay. Greg, so let me. I pulled up on the right there, Virginia. Here's a team that did get did pick up. I think the win at Syracuse this past week. You know, is this a team that could get back in the NCAA tournament conversation here now?
I don't think so. Really? Now they've, well, based on what?
A road win at Syracuse, tier two win. Coming right off of that, going into back-to-back road games at Clemson and at North Carolina, allegedly, probably canceled.
Okay, if they win both of those and then they win their next two against, Vatek and Wake, and then they beat Pitt, and then if they go to NC State and win.
Then never mind, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to start. If they do all that, then, yeah, they're going to start to get back into the picture. Do they have – okay, let me answer your question for Will. They definitely have the opportunities, even though the league is down. And, in fact, since they don't have to swing over their head so much, it might actually be better opportunities because while they need to win more games, they're in more games that are winnable. Are they good enough? Not from what I've seen.
Okay, that's fair. Fair enough.
Yeah.
There's the upcoming alleged schedule again in this conference, but let's jump over to the other undefeated, the last of the three undefeated teams of the nation, Titel. Even though they're down in fifth place on the screen here because they haven't played a conference game yet, and it goes by conference standings, Colorado State is 10-0.
And even if they never play another game, they might be a one seed if they finish undefeated. All the credit goes to Rocco. He was talking them up months and months ago. Haven't played since beating Mississippi State in Texas on December 11th because of COVID. Scheduled to open conference play with an easy home game against Air Force on Tuesday, then a huge road game at Boise State. The offense is unstoppable. They're top nine in the nation from one-point land and two-point land and three-point land. Unbelievable. And you know I love guys named John T. So my shout-out is to John Tonji, their big super sub, 12 points a game, a ridiculous 17 of 29 from behind the arc despite coming off the bench. I have them as a seven seed only because they haven't played in a month. But, I mean, this team, do you think they're like top four seed potential or am I crazy?
I think they are. They are got great.
Okay. Yeah. So I think if they win out or if they only lose one or two the rest of the way, yeah. Because the record's just going to be so bloated. But when you're talking about protected seeds, do they check the boxes here? Do they have that win against a team that's inside the bubble on the road? It still has it.
Creighton, neutral court.
Yeah.
And Mississippi State's close.
Circle March 1st at San Diego State. That's the other team I want to discuss. So now, Rocco, on the right side there, the Aztecs, we discussed this a couple of weeks ago, I think, that we kind of missed time to write this team off early on, but I think it's a solid enough resume here if they can really run through this conference and maybe only lose a couple games.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I don't think there was any reason to write them off. They were not full strength at Michigan. That game was ugly. The USC and BYU losses are totally explainable and excusable. And the St. Mary's neutral win, I mean, that was classic Aztecs basketball. And now they've got a key win to kind of hedge with. But I just want to reiterate, I mean, this Mountain West almost across the board is so improved. That even these two teams that we're looking at, they're going to slip up along the way. You've got a tough Wyoming team, a tough Fresno team, an improving Nevada team, a much better than expected Utah State team.
Yes.
And I haven't even talked about Tim Miles.
Don't forget this Boise State team.
Boise State's the hottest team in the country.
So, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, I'm fired up about the Mountain West. I'm actually really sad. I was supposed to be there tomorrow for Boise State, Utah State. I'll be in Utah later this week, but unfortunately got called off late. And hopefully Boise State gets back on the court because it's really unfortunate for how well they were playing that they got to go on a pause right now.
Yeah, there's the upcoming games again. A bunch of them have gone off already. We'll see what we can get in here.
We got a front range game.
Maybe we probably canceled it.
it's on
for now. Dorman, West Coast Conference, Gonzaga. They got a game in. They beat North Alabama, so I guess we got to congratulate them for that.
Yeah, this conference is having all sorts of issues with COVID and games being postponed. I believe San Fran was supposed to play Gonzaga over last weekend, and that got canceled. I was really looking forward.
It was supposed to be this week. Yeah. This week's San Fran Gonzaga game just went off a few hours ago, so it's rough.
Yeah, I was really looking forward to these top four teams playing and battling each other. I love this conference this year. Yeah, most years I love this conference. This year I think they're as strong as they've been ever. I think these four teams are all worthy of the tournament. I'm really upset we're missing some of the round robin of these top four teams. That would have been great basketball.
Like I mentioned at the top of the show, they're already talking about adding in doing three games a week with adding in Monday or Monday and or Tuesday nights to get these games caught up. Tytel, BYU, very unimpressive at a 12-point win over Westminster College, but it's probably not that win that you want to talk about. Maybe it is.
It's not. Tale of 2 months. 6-0 in November, they look great. They lost three games last month. They almost lost a fourth to Liberty on Christmas Day. They had to come all the way back in a second over a second-half deficit and ended up winning only by 5 points. They get an easy home game against Pacific on Thursday and then a brutal three-game stretch. St. Mary's, Gonzaga, and the Dons starting on Saturday. Great perimeter defense. They only allow 27% behind the arc, top 15 in the nation. They need some more from their senior guard, Alex Barcelo. First 11 games, 20 points a game. Last four games, only 11 points a game. I have them as an 8 seed, but they better turn it around. Otherwise, they are falling right off the bubble.
It's maybe we can get some of these games in. I'd love to see, hopefully get that St. Mary's BYU game in at least. We've seen for the other big ones. Rocco's already shaking his head. Did we lose that one too already?
Well, I'm a little bummed because another game I was hoping to see in Utah on Saturday is that game. And St. Mary's just went on pause like Friday. Because they called off the San Francisco St. Mary's game the day before. So it was Friday. And so,
I was looking forward to that one.
I know. Yeah. So, but we got a possibility. I mean, there's a lot of teams in bad shape, you guys. I think I sent something out on Twitter earlier, but yeah, I got a chance to talk to most of the teams over the weekend, just over texts and things. And I probably shouldn't name names or anything, but there are some very big concerns with some of the players that are pretty sick. So more so than anything, like there's more issues than just trying to get back on the court right now. So hopefully that turns around quick.
Yeah, we just send out our best to all of them because number one, we don't want people sick. We want these games played, but we want people healthy more than anything else here. Let's jump over to the American Conference. A couple of leagues left here, and why don't we start with Houston, Tytel? And they are 12-2 and probably looking like the only NCAA tournament team in this conference so far.
Had you said that 2 weeks ago, I would have agreed. Unfortunately, I think Coach Kelvin Sampson's New Year's resolution is for his health of his team because they got their leading scorer done for the year, Marcus Sasser, with a toe injury. They got one of their other best players, Tremont Mark, done for the year with shoulder surgery. So enjoy that record because it's going south fast, I fear. They began conference play last Sunday with the 5-point win at Temple. Terrible free throw shooting team, just under 66%. Somehow, KenPom still favors them to win each of the remaining 16 games by at least 4 points, but there's no way that's going to happen with all the injuries. I have them as a 3 seed right now. Again, enjoy it while it lasts.
Well, I'll tell you what, though. Here's my issue with Houston is you look at the rest of the conference, what they're going to be playing here. There's wins even without these players to be had because other than a couple of games, maybe one of the games that will be a really tough one. Rocco, how about SMU? Is this kind of what we predicted for them ending the season, that they'd struggle early and get better and better? I think let's go back to our American preview. I think we may have nailed this team.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the Kendrick Davis show. I mean, he's doing it all. And, with the Houston guys going down and with Memphis all over the place, he's got to be the front runner for American Conference Player of the Year. Just put on a show. Big 12-point win over a hot UCF team yesterday. It was yesterday.
Yep.
What is it? 8 wins in a row now for the Mustangs. That includes a win over another hot team at the time, Dayton. So certainly getting their heads on straight. And they did mix in a couple of decent road wins in between with New Mexico and Tulsa. Now, I am skeptical because SMU historically and even now feels like what Griggs would call a home court hero. I want to see them get this away win at Cincinnati on Thursday night. That would start to show me a lot, especially with Cincinnati coming off the loss. And then, you know, they'll get some other road tests with Memphis, Wichita, Houston later on. That, to me, will separate them from this fringy, really good home team to, like, a bona fide tournament contender. They got to get it done away from home.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
Real quickly, I'll put the upcoming schedule. We mentioned that huge SMU Cincinnati game on Thursday as the one to circle here. Wichita State at Houston allegedly on Saturday as well. But Dorman, let me jump over to the Atlantic 10 with you here. And the team that got votes this week in both polls, is it time to start paying a lot more attention to Davidson here?
I think so. Bob McKillop's doing an incredible job. This team shoots the ball as usual, really, really well. They play team basketball. Their defense is sound as it can be. And this conference is not, I had high hopes for St. Bonaventure. They haven't been good. Then they got hurt. Now they're sick. Davidson has every opportunity to take hold of this conference and get some wins. And their next game is in St. Joseph's, and St. Joe's might be one of the hottest teams in this conference, actually playing their best basketball this season. And they have a nice little run going, too.
St. Joe's. And that is a strange thing to say.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been a while since we've said that about them.
There's a St. Joe's profile, but a lot of times we pull one of them up on our show. There they are on the right, though. I don't think they're NCAA tournament good at that, or even close to that at this point, but
no, do agree. But they did blow out a Richmond team that is also not NCAA tournament.
Right, yeah, Richmond also lost to St. Louis. But should we talk about, though, Mr. Tytel, the three-way tie for first place between St. Joe, St. Louis, and the Fordham Rams?
I've been doing this for a long time. I don't know if I've ever talked about the Fordham Rams, but I think I'll give them a quick 30 seconds because they weren't it. This is a team. They won two games last year. They bring in a new coach in Kyle Neptune. They've got 8 wins this year. And their reward for that great start, a tough road game at the Bonnies on Wednesday. They're getting it done, as you might imagine, not because they recruited a bunch of hotshot freshmen, but they brought in a couple transfers. Antonio Day from FIU leading the team in free throws made. Darius Quisenberry from Youngstown State leading the team in 3-pointers made. They could use a little more size. They only have one starter who's taller than 6'5". So I have them as a 25 seed right now.
But for them to win, that is a remarkable turnaround. And Fordham has been my doormat. I mean, they've just been so easy to kick. They're 8-5 against D1 teams. First-year head coach. That is... I mean, if there was ever a sign that things were trending up at Fordham, and there hasn't been for the last 50 years or so, maybe they finally are.
Is that game at the Bonnies? Are the Bonnies coming out of their pause, or are they still locked down, Rocco?
They just postponed 4 of the games tomorrow, and the Bonnies and Fordham just went on a pause yesterday.
Oh, so it's Fordham.
Yeah, Bonnies are supposed to be good to go for the weekend game, which is St. Louis, a big one.
Okay.
But yeah, so yeah, I got a lot of struggles with the schedule in this league, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, the A-10 has lost a lot of games for this upcoming week. It's not looking good here either. I guess that completes all 10 of these conferences, though. So let's run to final thoughts here. And you know, Tytel, I'm going to start with you. I'll leave the screen share because I know you want to talk about a guy that I'm going to pull up on the screen right now.
So we're going to talk about David's favorite team, the Richmond Spiders. My shout out is to their senior point guard, Jacob Gilliard. He picked up his 400th career steal last month, which, just to put it in perspective, it might not be an unbreakable record because it's hard to say anything these days with all the extra seasons and games they're allowing. But to give you an idea, the next closest active player isn't even at 300. He's at 288 career steals. So he's already leading by 100 and he still is going. It looks pretty unbreakable to me. I'm still not sure if a 5'9 point guard can make it in the NBA, but the guy can defend, obviously. He can pass. He makes his free throws. So I hope that he at least gets a tryout because he knows how to get things done on the court.
Absolutely. So that's just the A-10 theme. Maybe we'll pull away from the A-10 theme for the rest of your final thoughts, though. Maybe we won't. Dorman, let me go to you next.
Let's get this country and this world back healthy and going again. And we come from the angle of the college basketball world. But if we can get everyone healthy and everyone back on the same page, maybe we can get the world going again. I wish everyone a happy, healthy new year. Let's get these teams and everyone in this country and the world healthy so we can get back to what we believe is normal and do all the wonderful things we do for fun in our lives every day. But happy, healthy new year. Stay safe. Let's start getting these games in.
I couldn't echo that more. Rocco, any other thoughts from you?
Yeah, the Tulane Green Wave came into last week 3-6 and coming off of a 22-day pause. And all of a sudden, they knock off Memphis at home and they win at Cincinnati, where they had built a 20-point first half lead and held on, had enough distance to get that win. Give it up for Jalen Cook, your American Conference Player of the Week, who averaged 22.5 points. He hit 7 of 11 three-pointers, shooting 50% overall, and committed zero turnovers in both games combined. Just really effective play. Apparently, Tulane maybe got some practice in because they look like a whole different team, and they're now 5-6.
Well, maybe we'll put Tulane in as our American champion then. Forget about that, Houston. Forget about SMU. Greg, do you want to finish off the show?
I'm still floored by the ACC, and I just can't believe it. And I know the voting, it's all subjective, but objectively, it's there too. When you look at the ratings and the metrics, it's Duke and it's nobody else that – I mean, is anybody – I think other teams will make the field, but here's the issue. Are some of these teams, like North Carolina, like Florida State, that we still believe to be good, going to have a hard time building up their resumes just because you can't play Duke 10 times between now and the end of the year? Like, you kind of need quality wins to climb the ladder, and there's not going to be those opportunities this year. So I'm just kind of interested to see how that's going to play out between now and what the final bracket looks like.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, I think I joked about last time we did it under the radar show, but maybe we need to chop the ACC down off of these the show. We'll do that Wednesday night on our under the radars. But speaking of under the radar, we will be back this week Wednesday evening with our regular under the radar podcast, back out to our normal schedule here. But
on Thursday.
We'll talk. We might be starting our bracket rundown shows either this Thursday or not next Thursday. That's a little bit up in the air right now. But we will be doing three shows a week starting very soon. But on behalf of John Titel and David Briggs up here, David Dorman and Rocco Miller from Bracketeer.org, the row below me, I am Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us. Have a happy new year, everybody, as Dorman said. And stay safe, stay healthy. Let's get these teams healthy, and hopefully we can get the season back on track and have a great rest of the season here. So happy 2022, everybody. Take care, and we'll talk to you again real soon.